everybody, and welcome to Coach's Corner. I have a guest back. She's been on the show before. Last time we talked about boundaries, and this time we're talking about boundaries again, and more specifically, how to make relationships healthy and drama-free. Nedra Tawab is the author of the New York Times bestseller, Set Boundaries, Find Peace. She is a licensed therapist and sought-out relationship expert and has practiced relationship therapy for more than 15 years. She's been featured as an expert all over the place and has been on many podcasts. She also runs a popular Instagram account where she shares practices, tools, and reflections for mental health and hosts weekly Q&As about boundaries and relationships. And before we dive in, I want to thank my sponsor. You know them. I hope you love them as much as I do, Organifi. I love Organifi's products. All of their products are 100% USDA certified organic. They really put so much thought into all of their products. I actually tried their magnesium when I traveled because I ran out of the usual magnesium that I take. And honestly, I slept better. Maybe it was being in California. I don't know. But I'm keeping up with the Organifi magnesium because I just really notice a difference. And again, it just goes to how well thought out all their products are. So you can find green juice, red juice, Organifi Gold, which is a yummy turmeric, reishi, lemon balm blend. They have collagen, they have protein powder, just anything you need, Organifi has got it. You get your 20% off when you use promo code OVERIT. So go to Organifi.com/OVERIT or use promo code OVERIT at checkout. That's Organifi.com, promo code OVERIT at checkout. All right, and now on to my conversation with Nedra. Nedra, welcome back to the show. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me back. That's always a good sign that I did a great job the first time.
Yes, you did. And not only that, just the topics that you're passionate about and the topics that you're an expert in are so relevant and so important, especially for my listeners. I have a lot of listeners who are really into personal transformation and making themselves the best they can possibly be. But when it comes to boundaries, it is where they often struggle. So I'm really excited to have this conversation with you today. So I'd love to just begin the conversation with asking you why, especially as a therapist, you decided to really hone in on boundaries. Why is that an area of passion for you?
You know, I think it's one of the hardest things that we do as humans is have these difficult conversations in our relationships. And when we're not talking about these things, therapeutically, I see people showing up with high levels of anxiety, depression, bipolar disorder, personality issues, all of these sorts of things, because there is some relational problems either presently or some severe relationship problems in the past. And so we know that boundaries create this sort of dysfunction, or the lack of boundaries creates this sort of dysfunction in our relationships with other people. And it's still such a hard thing to bring up. And it's not always that we're unaware of what the boundary is, it's that we have a really hard time communicating our needs to other people.
Mm-hmm. Well, I definitely want to unpack that, but I want to go back and look at the word dysfunction. Mm. So when you use the word dysfunction in relationship, I think it's important that we look at what that really means, because I think some people may have dysfunction in a relationship and may not even know it because it's just what they're used to. So how do you define dysfunction?
A pattern of unhealthy behaviors or acts in a relationship that is persistent. So if something happens one time, it's not dysfunctional, right? It's like, oh my gosh, we had an argument, we had a challenge. If this is the routine with this person all the time, it is a dysfunction in the relationship. If the relationship is not able to be repaired with communication and repair efforts, it is a dysfunctional relationship. When we can't go back to people and say, okay, this happened and how should we resolve this? And there's some communal, like, okay, well, I did this, you did that. there is dysfunction in the relationship. We can have dysfunctional family relationships, dysfunctional working relationships, dysfunctional friendships, marriages, all sorts of things. I think we assume that dysfunction only includes like alcohol and abuse, and it's many other things. If you have a friend who can't tolerate you placing a boundary with them, and each time that you try, they, you know, cut you off for a few months, you have a dysfunctional relationship with this person. You can't communicate with them. If you have an adult child and you refuse to loan them money and they start screaming at you and telling you what a terrible parent that you were, you have a dysfunctional relationship with that child. So it's not just, oh my gosh, this person has this big substance abuse issue, this is dysfunctional. It is so many things in our relationships. And here's the thing with us as humans, we are impacted by the dysfunctional relationships other people have. If you're in a partnership with someone and your partner has a dysfunctional relationship with their parents, you are now a part of the dysfunction because you have, even if you don't experience it with their parents, you hear about it. You see your partner's response or you see their sadness. So you are now roped into the dysfunction. And so just having the armor and knowledge of boundaries, it not only protects us, but we can now serve as social workers. I'm a social worker. We can now serve as social workers and, you know, maybe talk to people in a different way. Maybe let them know a little bit of what we're noticing. I notice whenever your mom visits, you know, after she leaves, you seem a bit sad, you know? And I wonder if she could come for shorter visits.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's such an important point to note is that when we may not be in a dysfunctional relationship, but when we're in relationship with someone who is in a dysfunctional relationship, mm-hmm. it does impact us. It really, really does. Mm-hmm. And having boundaries is one of the ways that we can manage and hopefully improve dysfunctional relationships. So let me ask a question before I ask my next question. Can dysfunctional relationships become functional?
Yes, if both parties are committed to working on the relationship. I don't know if it's possible to heal some levels of dysfunction on your own. If there are situations where there's something you need to accept, we can make those relationships healthier. And just because a relationship is unhealthy, it doesn't mean that we have to leave that relationship. When I think of substance abuse, there may be a person in your life, your best friend, who has a drinking problem, right? You may not want to say, you know what, this person, they're dysfunctional, I'm out of here. But you may want to choose how you show up in relationship with them. You may want to choose what type of outings you go on with this person. You may want to choose the way in which you talk to them about certain issues. There may be some, you know, things that you have to do with your boundaries with this other person. You can't stop their drinking, but it doesn't mean that you don't want to be in relationship with them. So is that an improvement? I'd say so. Now, does it make this person not have addiction to alcohol? No, it doesn't. But your acceptance of what the situation is makes it feel a little bit better for you to be in. Your expectations have shifted. Sobriety is, you know, forcing this person to be sober is no longer the thing. But if you say, oh, after I see that she has two drinks, I will leave. I will part ways. Because I don't want to see her slurring and falling off bar stools. So I will suggest that we Uber so she's safe, right? And I will let the other folks in our friend group know what I'll be doing. And I will step away from watching her while this is happening. Because again, we have an experience watching bad stuff. You know, some people in our lives, they're like watching a scary movie. And I don't know about you, but the worst scary movies are the one with children. The movies with children get me every time. Like, why is this child demon? Why is this little 7-year-old 100? Like, those get me every time to the point. Last night, I was sleeping. My daughter was standing over me.
Oh, no.
Woke up like, like, I just... I am shooketh from those movies. It had nothing to do with her being there. She was like, I just wanted a hug. I'm like, dude, I thought you were a 200-year-old little person. Like, I don't. Those movies are impacting me long after I've watched them.
Yeah.
So watching some of these people, it has a long-term impact. When you see this person doing this same thing, you know, we have a choice on whether we want to witness their dysfunction.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's I'm opting out of. I'm not opting out of the relationship with you, but I will opt out of this part of it.
I think that's such a great distinction, because I feel like a lot of times we think we don't have choice. It's like, well, if I want this relationship with this person, the friendship example, well, then I just have to put up with, like, you know, basically carry her home because she's so drunk. It's like, no, you can still have the relationship just with boundaries on it as well. So I'd love to talk about the difference. This is something I have to remind myself and my clients of frequently, the difference between boundaries and a request.
Well, a request is what we relay to another person. Can you do this thing for me? Our boundaries can be not doing something that, let me give you an example. You could say to your brother, hey, can you pick me up from the airport at 5:00? Your brother could come at 5. He could also come at 5:15, 5:30. If he comes at 5:30, you may place a boundary of, you know what, in the future, I'm not going to ask this person because they don't come on time. Or maybe you start to call them sooner and say, hey, are you going to be there? Like, what things will you do? The boundary is really the stuff that you'll do. It's not what this other person has to do. And I think sometimes we think the boundary is what we're telling this other person to do.
Exactly.
Like in the example of drinking, we think the boundary is, oh, I have to tell them not to drink. And it's like, you're going to tell an alcoholic not to drink? Wow. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that person is an alcoholic. Right. Like, isn't that the essence of having a drinking problem?
Right. Exactly.
Like, I think they're going to do it. And you may need to figure out how you'll respond as a result, what you can, you know, maybe do to prepare, or what you'll, you know, like, those are the things that you can figure out. You can request, hey, I'm having a gathering at my house, please don't drink anything. But your boundary could be telling them they need to go.
Yeah.
You have to leave. You know, I made a request. You didn't honor the request. And this is the boundary is the consequence now. So I have to ask you to leave this space. So request is, you know, something that we offer people to help facilitate what our boundaries are.
Yeah. This was the big one for me, because as a people pleaser and as someone who definitely has some, for lack of a better word, codependent patterning, I thought a boundary was, you know, please don't talk to me that way, or I won't stand it when you talk to me that way. But I wouldn't leave, or I wouldn't, nothing would happen. I just thought a very firm request, maybe with like an ultimatum, was the boundary. And I really had to look at, no, a boundary is something I can control. And a request is simply a request. And I think that the codependent people pleaser, like afraid of losing love, part of me was like, boundaries felt so scary that it felt safer to make requests, but then I get resentful because my relationships would be dysfunctional. So thank you for that reminder.
I remember a comedian was talking about a story where there was a person dating someone in a wheelchair, and they said the person was abusive. And the comedian said, you know, how do they abuse you? They tell me to bend down and they slap me. And it was like, what? You allow that person to do that? Like, they can't even stand up and do it. Like, you are leaning into it. And I think sometimes when we are in those situations with people, you know, disability aside, I think we feel like they own the space. if they yell at me, I have to sit there and tolerate it until they say stop. I'll tell you of a recent situation. I have a particularly emotionally unstable person in my life who, when they get upset, they will send a series of mean text messages, and I've taken to ignoring them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I'm ready to talk about it with the person, I highlight the information and I say, you know, this was a part of my process and this is why. You know, when I say you can't talk to me that way, I mean, I won't talk to you while you're doing it. You can't say, call me after you've sent me messages. So I'm calling you to be fussed at.
Right.
That doesn't register with me. Like, someone will call you for you to yell at. You've already done it on my voicemail. You've already sent all text messages. Now I have to call and get it? No, but what I can do is block you.
Right.
What I can do is call you when I'm prepared to talk to you. But what I will not do is allow you to yell at me, even though you really want to.
Yep. Yep. And that takes, okay, so let me ask you this. We've established it's setting boundaries is hard in a relationship. So what type of self-work does it require to start becoming better at A, knowing a boundary needs to be set, and then B, setting it and holding it?
Well, you know, our feelings are revealing to us the boundaries that we need. Whenever I start to feel resentful, frustrated, anxious, sad, upset, when I start to ruminate on certain things that have happened, I then pause and say, what is the thing I'm needing from some situation that I'm in? You know, a recent one was laundry. Seems simple, big problem, right? Laundry. I felt like I had become a wash and fold person. Just so much laundry. And I said, you know what? I'm getting really frustrated to the point where I found myself avoiding it. And I said, you know what? My children are old enough to help with their laundry.
Yeah.
And so now I just wash and I don't fold. Right. So I wash and then I dump their clean clothes on their floor and I say, hey, you got an hour to fold your clothes. Makes me feel so much better about laundry. But that resentment was an indication that I don't, there's something about doing this that is not sitting well with me. What other options do I have for this task? I could continue to do it and be very angry. And now I'm like, did you really wear this many pairs of pants? You know, like, you know, I'm texting my friends like, where can you find disposable clothes? You know,
I love that.
There are options. There are options, whether it's having people help me with it, doing it less often, you know, fussing at people, hiring, you know, one of these companies that offer like wash and fold services. Like there are so many options, but if I just sit with this as, oh, this is the only thing I have to do forever, that it just feels punitive. Yeah. And that feeling starts to build resentment towards children who just want to wear clothes.
Yeah.
Clean clothes.
Right.
Hit you with your shirt on that I had to fold.
Oh my gosh. My daughter's only two, so there's a lot of laundry, but she's going to learn how to do it pretty soon.
Yeah. I'd say 6 or 7. And my 7-year-old, she's like, it takes me so long. I'm like, it's been 30 minutes, dude. Yeah. And you were watching your tablet. Like it's, hey, it happens. I'm not telling you to fold towels. So I do. I literally just give them their clothes. Anything that goes on a hanger, I put it on a hanger. You need towels, I still fold it up. But your clothes, your pants, your socks, your undergarments, you have it. You have it. Because you don't want a burnt out mama. Mm-mm.
Oh, so true. Man, if I could teach Athena how to fold a fitted sheet, that would be amazing. Because I still haven't mastered it myself.
If you know what I do, here's my cheat. Now, this is my laundry cheat. I take one pillowcase And I basically throw everything in there.
Yeah.
I don't even fold it. I'm over the folding of it.
Yeah.
And once I turn that little flap over, it looks like something magical is happening in there.
It
like
does.
Things are folded. I'm like, it nothing
does.
Is in there folded.
Yeah. And then you just put it in the linen closet and, you know, they're just going to go on your bed anyway. So yeah, I love that. I love that. So laundry hacks are a great tip. And related, but it's such a metaphor for, you know, the things, the bigger things, right? Because we're talking about laundry, but this can really lead to the demise of relationships and actually create dysfunction in a relationship that was functional, perhaps. But when we build that resentment because we're not holding boundaries and we're not communicating our needs, because I look at boundaries in a lot of ways, and one of the things that boundaries enable us to do is get needs met and be able to communicate our needs in a very clear way. And if we're not doing that, then we're building resentment. And I see this with a lot of people that have more of those people-pleasing type of tendencies, is just stacking away little resentment chips. And then like one day, you know, they just want a divorce, or the friendship is over, or they pull out of a business, or whatever it is, because the resentment has just, all those chips have become so heavy because of a lack of really establishing boundaries in the relationship. So thank you for highlighting how important boundaries are to not building resentment. I want to talk about forgiveness. And in your book, you talk about toxic forgiveness. Can you speak to that and what some of the myths around forgiveness are?
Yes. Toxic forgiveness is when we pretend to forgive and forget, and it is for us to stay in a relationship that we do want to be in. And we hold on to the thing that is bothering us. We haven't repaired. We may not talk about it. And in passive aggressive ways, or when we feel like it's the right time, there just becomes this, you know, this big explosion. It all comes up. It's like, and you never, it's like, whoa, you've been holding on to that for 8 years ago. I didn't know you were still upset about that thing. Because sometimes we don't forgive people for the things that they do to us. We don't. And that's really hard to accept, because we live in a culture that says you have to forgive people. You forgive people for your mental peace. You forgive people, you know, all these quotes about why you need to forgive people. And we really try to do it, and it doesn't always work, and that's okay. There are some things that you will forever be bothered by. It doesn't mean that you can't be in a relationship with the person, but it doesn't mean you have to hide it. It doesn't have to, you don't need to pretend it doesn't exist. It could be a thing, and you can still move forward in the relationship with that person. You can forgive and never be in relationship with a person again. You could say, you know what? I want to release this energy that you have over me. I want to pardon you from, you know, whatever you think that you may have caused me. I forgive you. And I do not want to talk to you tomorrow. You know, so that's another thing, because sometimes we feel like, you know, if you forgive a person, you have to be in relationship with them. And that's just not true. I can forgive you and choose not to be in relationship with you. I can forgive you and still have some feelings of anger. So there is this, you know, we have all of these ideas around, you know, you must forgive, or if you forgive, it needs to look like this. And what I have found is many people struggling with things they actually have not forgiven. They still have this stuff, and they have to be in relationship with someone. I find that very often with, you know, children and their parents when they become adults. You know, some of this stuff, they don't forget it. I mean, I've had clients who are 80 years old, and they're talking about stuff that their parents did. Their parents are deceased, and they're talking about, you know, oh, my, you know, my dad would beat us or whatever the thing is. And it's like, okay. And, you know, they had a relationship with their dad until he died. So it's not like they ended these relationships, but they couldn't be close relationships because they're living with this trauma that they have in a relationship. And, you know, the family is like, well, that's, you know, that was in the past. Let's move on. And it's like, I, you know, there are just some things that I can't forget.
Right. Right. Well, maybe this is a good time to talk about being a cycle breaker. Is another thing you talk about in the book. How do we become cycle breakers? And what's amazing about that? And what's also challenging about that?
Yeah, a cycle breaker is someone who steps outside of what has happened historically in their family. It could be a first generation graduate. It could be a person who bucks the system and they're not codependent like everyone else. It could be someone who, you know, marries outside their religion. It could be someone who breaks away from their religion. There are all sorts of ways that we break cycles in relationships. And when that happens, it can be challenging for us to go to the family system that really upholds, you know, certain values and say, hey, I need you to support me with this new thing. You know, sometimes they don't know how. I was a first generation graduate. You know, my mother and father and nobody knew how to help me study. They didn't know how to fill out a FAFSA. They didn't know, you know, so it's that support was found in, you know, a student resource center, you know, academic counselor or, you know, my counselor in high school, my peers. That's where I got support. It wasn't in my home for, you know, people who didn't know to teach me. Often when you're a cycle breaker, you know, you have to look outside of that system because what you're trying to do is very new and different. You're a trailblazer. And so hopefully other people will get some knowledge in your family from you, but you are the first person. And looking to these people to say, you all don't notice this enmeshment? It's like, no, they're enmeshed. Right. they're in the enmeshment. So they don't notice it. They are living happy in a whole enmeshment pool. And you are the person who's saying, oh, I have different ideas. I have different political views. And you have to go and find your people elsewhere.
Yep. Yep. That's a soul family piece. You know, there's a family we are born into. And then there's the people we find that are really aligned. I want to workshop a couple of things with you.
Yeah.
That I think would be super helpful for our listeners. So just give some hypothetical examples that I know are common things that my listeners struggle with. So the first is setting boundaries with parents. And that can look like a parent who, you know, expects you to answer the phone every time they call, a parent whose opinions are a little too strong and they, you know, are always giving their opinions, but basically having being an adult child and having a parent that definitely, you know, triggers you because you don't feel like there's healthy boundaries in place. How can we first, one, start to identify what is a healthy parent-child relationship, especially as adults, and two, put healthy boundaries in place so that we can have a more functional relationship with our parents when we're adults?
You know, I think that is ongoing. You know, our parents have an idea of what their relationships will, what the relationship will look like when we become adults. And it sometimes doesn't mimic the thing that we want in the relationship. And so there is this period of sort of reimagining the order of operations, right? It's this reimagining of what does contact look like. I remember, you know, speaking with a woman who, you know, for years she was on her family cell phone plan. And even when she broke away from it in her 30s, you know, their expectation was like, hey, we pay your phone bill, you have to talk to us. Like, if we call, we are the owner of this phone. So when she broke away, you know, the expectation sort of continued because we have this pattern. And she's like, hey, you know, when I get off work, listen to some music. I don't want to chat with you on my way home, or I want to call a friend. And, you know, her parents found that pretty offensive. And there was this period of, you know, like discord where you know, it was really uncomfortable. And then they came to, you know, maybe a little happier space where it's like, okay, so we could talk twice a week. When parents have children who go off to college, you know, their expectation, oh my gosh, my kids are going to call me every day. And then you get a kid who calls you on Sundays. Mm-hmm. So some of it is parents being emotionally immature enough and understanding life cycles and life dynamics enough to say, it is okay if you want, you know, things to look a certain way in our relationship. I can respect that. Mm. My daughter recently had my oldest daughter had a field trip, and she's still in elementary, but she had a field trip. And she said, do you want to sit next to me on the bus? And I said, yes. And then later that day, 3 hours later, she came to me and she said, I have something really hard to tell you. And I said, what is it? And she said, don't be mad. I said, I probably won't be if you're saying that. And she said, I don't want to sit next to you on a bus. And I'm like, okay. She was like, are you upset? I said, I'll get over it. I can manage my feelings. I'm sure there's an audiobook I can listen to while not being tapped by you. So, you know, she chose to sit next to a friend behind me. So she was still tapping me and hugging me. Mom, I love you and all of these things. So I'm like, basically, we sit together. But okay, I can allow you to place that boundary. As she gets older, it will be, you know, more exclusion of me. You know, it'll be like, I want to go to the mall with my friends. I want to, you know, I will allow that. I don't want her to feel guilty for enjoying her life without me always being there. Mm. And I think sometimes with parents, they feel like closeness is contact and not depth. Mm. We can have a really deep relationship and I don't talk to you every day. Say some of the people that I talk to a few times a month are my closest relationships.
Yeah.
I don't need to talk to the people. I mean, outside of my children and my husband, I don't need to talk to the people I love every day.
Yeah.
I'm like, trust that I love you and you are thought of.
Right.
But if our closeness is only contact daily, that's not a measure of anything. Had those relationships where I talk to this friend every day. We're not talking about anything.
Right. That's right.
We're talking about other people. We are in other folks' business. We are gossiping. We're doing a bunch of stuff that has no depth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about my neighbor. I mean, all sorts of stuff. It's not deep.
Right. Right.
So deep does not mean, you know, daily. Deep could mean something different. Maybe deep is daily. But I think the content in our conversation is more important than the amount of times per day or per week or hour we talk to people.
Right. And, you know, if a parent or whoever it is needs that connection in order to feel loved or whatever, you know, that can be dysfunctional, right? If someone is reliant on us, like if a parent is reliant on us to feel okay for whatever reason, that they need to talk to us every day, otherwise we're not a good kid or whatever, that from what you described is not healthy in the relationship. And I think that a lot of people have relationships out of obligation and out of, well, you know, this is something this person needs, so I'll do it anyway. But to me, that's not love. That's not healthy. That's straight up obligation. So before I get to our next example, could you talk a little bit about obligatory relationships, like how we know we're in one and how we can start? I mean, you gave us some tips already, but I really want to speak on that. Like, well, it's my mom and she's alone and she doesn't have anyone. And so I need to talk to her every day, even though I don't want to. Like, could you speak to that obligation and how we deal with that?
I find that obligation feels forced. Mm-hmm. It feels like something we have to do versus something we want to do.
Right.
If I don't do this, then, right? When we want to do something, it's not that hard to call a person. We're excited about it. Oh, I can't wait to call so-and-so. Oh, I can't wait to see so-and-so. When we don't want to, it's, I can't believe they're calling me, right? So we notice, you know, those pauses that we have in our relationships with dealing with certain people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
One of the things I think is really helpful that I suggest to my clients sometimes is just journal for a few minutes after you talk to certain people. Just pick five. Just journal about how they made you feel, the content of your conversation, whether or not you felt hurt, if anything meaningful was discussed. Just kind of sit with those things, right? And a lot of folks find like, I don't like talking to my mama because there's nothing being discussed. They didn't actually ask about you. They're sharing a lot about them. They're telling you a lot about problems, or they're asking you for solutions, you know, and we may not notice how the people that we talk to impact the rest of our day. There are some people, I have certain days of the week where I'm busier. And on those really busy days, I'm like, you know, there are certain people, they're on the no call list. Like, I just cannot talk to them. I do not want to text with them because I'm busy. I'm listening to a lot of folks' problems and life situations. I cannot talk to this person and hear their stuff. I am off the clock. There are certain people who, you know, I remember, you know, a while ago, I was in a therapy training about burnout, and they mentioned something about not putting your most joyless client at the end of your day. Like, it's like, you know, we all have those people, and it's like, oh no, Charlene, I'm not seeing her at 3 o'clock. That's the end of my day. She would not ruin my evening. You know, that might be a lunchtime person. And then after you see her at lunchtime, you have these other four people and you're like, oh, I love to talk to so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so. So that way you're not like drained for the rest of the day because you've ended your day with this really chaotic, you know, situation. And sometimes we don't think about that. We're not like, oh my gosh, this is probably not a good person to talk to as soon as my dog died. You know, this is probably not a good person to talk to when I'm worried about the test results from my last pap smear. This is, you know, like being aware of the people in your life and where they should be placed is energetic magic.
Energetic magic. I love that. That's so true. You know, some people aren't placed in our life in the right place, and we have to do that energetic magic. And I'd love you to speak to the part of us that's so worried about hurting people's feelings when we do that, when we put people in the place they need to be, or when we set those boundaries and somebody might get hurt feelings. How do we deal with that inside ourselves?
Well, you know, I think a lot of times there are relationships where people think they have a higher regard in our lives than we actually have for them. And that is typically first family, right? So, you know, if your parents, your sisters, your brothers, you know, they're going to feel like, oh my gosh, I have this weight. So I'll give you an example. You know, many times when folks get married, there's an assumption that family figures will have certain roles in the wedding. And I've seen people argue, you're not going to put your sister in your wedding, you're not going to have your brother in your wedding, you're not going to have your first cousin in your wedding. It is really where people are like, no, this is the order of things. And it is a time for the bride and groom to say, wow, I don't look at this relationship in the way that this person might, right? And so it might require a tough conversation. And then there are lots of times where people just do it out of obligation, where they say, you know what, I'm going to let my siblings be in my relationship because I don't want to have this big fight in the family. Or I'm going to invite aunt so-and-so because I don't want, you know, this big rift in the family. Another time we might see that is, you know, baby showers and funerals. You look at the obituary, you kind of see who has the least amount of pictures or whose name was it. Maybe I just look at that like, they ain't got no pictures of him. or, you know, who actually wrote something in the obituary, or who has the, you know, who was left out, and, you know, these sorts of things. And you know, it does sort of let people know. But even before those really big things happen, it can be really hard to exclude people, because that's really what we might feel like we're doing. But we have to be aware of the energy in the room. If I invite this person to this thing, how will I feel? Not right. If they're excluded, how will they feel? How will I feel having them here?
Yeah, I love that question, because again, we can build resentment. You know, if we're doing things not to hurt other people's feelings, we're building resentment. We're not having an authentic relationship. And I always remind myself and clients that when you communicate with love and truth, you know, then your side of the street is clean. And often the truth doesn't make people feel good. Because they have to look at their side of the street. And that's not our responsibility. No, we can't be responsible for other people's feelings, so much so that we are creating dysfunction in the relationship because we're not honoring our boundaries. So thank you for that. As we wrap up, the last example I'd love you to speak to, and I know I'm giving very broad things, which could be hard to speak to, but maybe if you could just make some general comments in relationships, especially romantic relationships. What I see couples struggle so much with is kind of collapsing wanting someone to change with acceptance and setting boundaries. So can you talk about like what actually is a boundary in a relationship versus what is an expectation for the person to change versus just accepting them for who they are?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it makes sense in our relationships to make requests or state our needs and ask people to do certain things that would make us comfortable. You know, if you share your bedroom with someone and you say, hey, you know, I'm not sleeping well, I need you to turn the TV off at about 10 o'clock so, you know, I could go to bed. You know, that might be a reasonable request. It might not be a big deal in your relationship, but what happens when that person refused to turn it off at 10 o'clock? You know, the acceptance of that might be, one, we can't have a TV in a room. Two, we need to share different rooms. Or, you know what? I will put on a mask and earplugs. You know, like, what's, you've put it out there. You put the need out there. What will you do if they don't honor it? And sometimes, you know, there are some needs that we have to repeat. I think until, you know, a parent has a child that is 18 years old, you will be telling them, pick your coat up, pick your shoes up, get your stuff up, blah, 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 blah. It's just going to be a repeated need. There are some kids who will just tidy up, but most kids won't. You will have to repeat yourself. So there are some things for our own sanity that we may need to repeat. And we're really not trying to change the person. We're trying to have them meet our need. So we need to be clear about, am I trying to change this person or am I trying to get them to meet my need? If I ask them to, you know, show up on time and I give them a little reminder call, am I trying to make them an on-time person or am I saying, hey, this is really important, get your butt up? So being clear on, am I trying to change people or am I trying to get them to meet my need by facilitating it in this particular way? In most cases, you know what I think? I don't know if I care how you treat other people sometimes as much as I care about how you treat me.
Right.
Because they get to set their own boundaries. So for example, if they have no requirements that are similar to the ones that I'm saying, you don't even have to do it with this other person.
Right.
These are my boundaries. So I'm not trying to change you, but I do want you to do these things for me. Now, you can take yourself over to your friendships and just be regular old you, but I'm going to tell you, some of those things aren't going to work for me and vice versa. So just recognizing, am I trying to change a person? And I think we get into this change stuff when we try to get people to think like us, when we try to, you know, get them to adopt our philosophies and these sort of things. Like, I just don't understand why they don't know how to wash and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Listen, I really don't care if you know how to wash everything on cold and here are the instructions. You know, I'm not trying to make you a better washer. I just need you to put this in the washing machine. Right. You know, like my goal is not to change you, but to get laundry done.
Yeah. So, I'm just laughing because I'm thinking about my husband and I and like, dishes. Like my husband thinks that the dishes are done as long as they're washed, but he will just stack all the dishes like on the counter. And then he will stack the wet dishes on top of the dry dishes and not put them away. And it drives all the dishes, me bonkers.
The dishes are done according to him. And I according think that's to him. According to him. Yeah. And we all have our different way of doing
right.
things.
Right. And so I've had to, my request has been, hey, it's like the dishes are shouting at me every time I walk by. That's what it feels like. Can you just put things in the dishwasher? And he loads the dishwasher, like literally he's throwing the dishes in from the other side of the room. That's what it looks like to me. And I have to decide inside myself, okay, he's honored the request. He's put them in the dishwasher. Am I either going to just rearrange the dishwasher or do I just let it go because the dishes are done? And this is like a mini example, but such can we can apply it to the macro of, you know, people can quote unquote change to the degree that they can, but at some level, we got to accept them for who we are, they are, and work with it or change the relationship. But it can be maddening to constantly want someone to change in a relationship. It can be just exhausting. Thank you so much. This has been so informative and so helpful on so many levels. You have such a huge body of work, but is there anything that I missed that you feel is important to say before we wrap up?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Here's what I think, you know, people need to remember. Boundaries are a practice, and it's something that you will always do. As I, you know, the other day I was looking at some pages from Set Boundaries, Find Peace, and I said, you know what? I need to reread this book. Because, you know, every year and a half, I look at this book differently. I'm like, did I say this? I must have been writing this to my future self because this is what I need to hear today. We don't even, you know, think I realized that mm-hmm. some of the situations that I was using to describe others would later apply to me.
Right. Right.
It's like, oh, look at that.
So true. Oh my
so gosh, it so is, true. You know, it is a practice. Like those boundaries that I needed 3 years ago when I wrote Set Boundaries, Find Peace, they are still true, but now I need some other things.
Yeah.
It's, you know, yeah. It's like on and on and on, you know, just as soon as you feel like, oh, I've got this master, here's this new life thing.
Yeah. And it's like parenting too. Just when I think I've got it, she changes or something happens. So thank you for reminding us that it is a process. It is a process with everything. So can you tell people where they can connect with you, where they can find your awesome Instagram account and where they can get the book?
Yes, you can connect with me on Instagram at Nedra Tawab, on Threads at Nedra Tawab, on Facebook at Nedra Tawab, all social platforms at Nedra Tawab. I have a website, www.nedratawab.com. On my website, I have some pretty cool quizzes, a boundaries quiz, a relationship quiz, lots of free resources, and you can find out about all of my books, not just Set Boundaries, Find Peace, but also Drama Free and other offerings that I have.
Love that. Well, thank you so much for your work and really being an advocate for people having more functional relationships and setting boundaries. I appreciate you.
You're welcome.